Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And in this episode, we're talking about designer jeans with a G, not with a J.
What?
Yeah. I know, you wore your best jeans.
I have my Jordache jeans on, just for this episode.
Well, you know, you can still enjoy wearing them, but yeah, we're taking things to genetic level here. And this is based in large part on a World Science Festival panel that you attended in New York City.
That's right. Designer jeans, fashioning our biological future, which you can check out. You can just, you can Google WSF, or excuse me, World Science Festival, I should say, and designer jeans, and look at a very spirited discussion about the future of reproduction, and a couple of really great panelists on there. But we wanted to bring it to you guys' attention because some of the technology that's happening is fascinating, and it brings up all sorts of ideas and problems and solutions, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of controversy in this this general area of scientific investigation and discovery, and there has been for some time, because you end up diving down into some of the central ideas about what it is to be human and how how humans work as a species, how we evolve or how we don't evolve, and people get a bit touchy about that. I mean, and to your point, they get a bit touchy about it in this panel you attended, and certainly that's what makes a great panel discussion.
Yeah, and the premise of this panel, a couple of questions thrown out there, like, what if you could prevent disease through genetic engineering even before conception?
All right.
Would you do it?
Well, the gut answer would be yes.
Right. You'd want to give your child a leg up in the biological world and you know, have that child not have to experience some serious disease. But the other question was, what if you could tinker a little bit more with genetics and give that child, say, a propensity for, more robust intellectual skills or powers or even athletic prowess?
You kind of get into this area of science and genetic science as an honor system candy dish. Do you take the one piece
yeah.
of candy? Or do you maybe you take a one for later as well? Or maybe you just reach in and get a whole handful. At what point do we self-regulate? At which point do we stop? At what point do we need someone else saying, don't get five candies, only get one?
Yeah, and we do have a basis in reality to start judging these things by. So we're going to get in the time machine and go back a little bit. First, we're going to go back to the 1970s, in which there was a firestorm in Cambridge. because there was this idea of recombinant DNA happening at a very serious level. I mean, you have this moment when scientists in genetic engineering were trying to move forward with this, and they were trying to create guidelines with the National Institutes of Health, and we're doing that. And there were a couple of alarmists, a couple of scientists who said, wait a second, we need to sit back because this is very important here. If you can take a bacteria and you can tinker with its genes and you can do it in a way that this bacteria survives this and thrives, mm-hmm. does this mean that we'll be unleashing pathogens? Does this mean that this ability also allows us to start to create Frankenstein children?
Yes. The F word, the scientific F word. Yeah, and which inevitably comes up. I believe we've podcasted on Frankenstein before, not only as a fictional character, but just as an idea, as a symbol of science gone too far, science interfering with the human condition in a meaningful way.
Yeah, and this, of course, is a discussion that has to happen. But out of this discussion comes, again, these guidelines for genetic engineering, many of which are still in place today. And if you want to look at why they had a problem with this in the first place, well, you have to go even back further in history and look at the American eugenics movement, which happened in the late 1800s and early 1900s and is fundamentally a misunderstanding of genes and how they work and are passed down in people.
Now, if you're familiar with the term eugenics, it probably carries a certain dark weight for you because it has become synonymous with human breeding programs, essentially, with forced sterilization and with the rise of the Nazi regime in Germany.
Yeah, it's all bungled up in this. So if you look at the American eugenics movement, you see that there's this oversimplification of how genetics works. So you start to have scientists say, oh, well, we think that these traits are passed down and here's this imbecile. And really, this is the jargon that they use in these papers. Here's this imbecile breeding another imbecile. And how could we stop this? Well, sterilization is one way that we could stop it. And they start to actually put this into practice because at the same time this is happening, there are a lot of people who are being institutionalized when they should not have been. So maybe a person had a bad case of alcoholism or some other thing that didn't line up to society, and the society's best solution at that moment was, well, just put them in an institution.
Yeah.
And then you have this problem with this eugenics coming online, actually garnering some credibility as a way to measure someone's not just IQ, but what their general traits were.
Yeah, you see this push to say, oh, well, this person is, I mean, in a sense, eugenics at a very basic level has, it's not setting out to do evil. Few human endeavors really say, all right, what can we do to just really make a dark name for ourselves? I mean, the idea was essentially, can we improve humans? Can we ensure healthy babies? But you quickly get into this area where you're saying, well, let's just sterilize the imbeciles. Let's sterilize the criminals. Let's sterilize the homosexuals. And inevitably you get into this very dark and inhuman territory.
And if someone is institutionalized, in a sense, many of their rights have been taken away. And there have been, there's actually a very famous case called Buck versus Bell that looks at whether or not someone has rights on this and is still on the books, right? It's a law that, and we won't go into it because, it's a pretty lengthy case, but basically someone was sterilized because the mom had been in an institution and the line of reasoning was that she was genetically predisposed to be an imbecile like her mother. Therefore, let's sterilize her. So this is a problem, right? This line of logic. Moreover, you've got a bit of xenophobia going on at this time. There's a large immigrant population, so there's this idea again that you know, that there's a sort of purity that's being muddied.
Yeah,
with
they're
other
muddying
people.
Our waters. What can we do to purify ours?
Yeah, and who does this? What sort of line of reasoning does this appeal to? The old Hitler.
Yep. Yep, the old Hitler, as you say, the Nazi party. And clearly, yeah, you see, you look back in time, you see Hitler, picking up on ideas of American eugenics. You see Mein Kampf referencing the language of the American eugenics movement. You see them sort of in a mutual admiration society,
mm-hmm.
where the American eugenics movement, individuals in that are saying, oh, well, look at the great work they're doing in Germany. They're doing so much more advanced than we are. And then likewise, you have people on the German side saying, oh, the American eugenics movement, they have it figured out. We should be doing more of what they're doing. And both sides are kind of headed for a very real disaster.
Right. In fact, some of the ideas and writings of the American eugenics movement shows up in Mein Kampf,
mm-hmm.
right? Like this is the extent to which they are in bed with each other. However, there's a backing off by the American Eugenics Society, because eventually what we see are these ideas manifesting themselves in very real ways leading up to World War II. So thankfully, this movement in America loses a lot of its momentum and people back away from it. And they begin to understand that we're going into a territory here that we don't necessarily want to go into. We don't want to sterilize people. But at this point, I do want to point out that 30 states had adopted sterilization policies for those in institutions or jails.
Yeah.
So it really did make somewhat of a mainstream play here.
Yeah, and you look back through it, some notable cases. I mean, for instance, you have Alan Turing, central figure in computer science and AI, prosecuted for homosexuality in 1952 when such acts were still criminalized in the UK, and he accepted treatment with estrogen injections, also known as chemical castration, as an alternative to prison.
So sad.
Yeah, tragic story. Another interesting case that I ran across, and this surprised me, Sweden. Sweden has a reputation for being very friendly to LGBT interest for the mm-hmm. most part, right? But up until 2013, if a Swedish transgender person wanted to legally update their gender on official ID papers, a 1972 law required them to both get divorced and sterilized first.
Wow.
Yeah, that came off the books in 2013. So it's no longer reality, but 2013.
So all of this gives, I think, everybody a good idea of the basis that scientists are working off in 1970, when all of a sudden genetic engineering becomes a very real thing. And mm-hmm. they look back to the past and how technology or science or ideas were used, and they go forward.
Yeah. And I mean, we're still in the shadow of eugenics.
Yeah. It's a very long shadow, mm-hmm. and it's casting its shadow over some technologies now that are actually very helpful. But again, there's a bit of a firestorm about that. So let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we are going to talk about the three-person IVF.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product, and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back, and we're going to talk about a little something called mitochondrial transfer, or how might have we have heard of this in the media?
Okay, it has been picked up as babies with three parents, also called three-person in vitro fertilization, and not used yet would be ménage à trois IVF.
Yeah. We can coin that one, yeah.
We could probably do that. And there would be some, there would be one person on the panel, though, that would be pretty annoyed with that. And for good reason.
Yeah. I mean, because it is a, this is a situation where if you're talking about this in terms of three-parent babies, et cetera, you are focusing on one little detail of the situation and kind of blowing it out of proportion. But how can you not when you're talking about three genetics influencing the birth of a child instead of just two or one in the case of cloning.
I just think it's funny that that sort of baggage comes to the table, that this idea that's like ménage à trois genetic material all coming together, because
yeah,
it's not really that. And yet that's probably the sexiest way that the media or anybody else can kind of describe it.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound as sexy because, well, let me just explain really quickly what mitochondrial transfer is. This is when doctors inject the cytoplasm from another woman's egg into the egg of a patient with mitochondrial disease. And the aim here is to eliminate mitochondrial disease from the resulting offspring. But the offspring in question, essentially, technically, boasts three genetic parents.
Yeah, and we'll get more into that, to that actual statistic.
But that's just the end point of that. I mean, the important part is you're trying to help a woman who suffers from mitochondrial disease have healthy offspring that does not suffer from it. That's the aim here. It's not, let's get all Frankenstein-y and make three-parent genetic families. No.
No, mutations in mitochondrial DNA can cause rare but really serious illnesses and defects, including heart failure, dementia, and blindness. And many of these conditions are fatal. And diseases like diabetes, stroke, cardiac defects, epilepsy, or muscle weakness may originate from mitochondrial defects. Okay, so there's a lot going on here. There's a preventative measure. And let's just kind of back up a little bit and go back to mitochondria, because I know I feel like everybody's probably in their like fifth grade or sixth grade class right now talking about the powerhouse of the cell. But it's more than that. It has its own DNA, and it's a separate DNA in the nucleus. And mitochondrial DNA is inherited via the maternal line from mother to child. That's
okay.
Why this is a problem, right? It's passed down. So when you do this, when you make this transfer from a donor egg, the resulting egg, which has the nucleus from the intending mother, has 99.9% of its coding DNA from the intended mother. So we're talking about just an infinitesimal amount of genetic material from the donor egg.
Right.
You cannot say this is like a three-person embryo.
But technically you can.
You can, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so, of course, people end up focusing on that. I can fault them, but I can't fault people for finding that idea kind of exciting because it changes the way you sort of think about it changes the way you think about just two-person parentage or one-person parentage.
Well, I mean, it takes me back to when we talked about chimeras, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is that case in which there was a person who had not absorbed her twin, like, intentionally, but, you know, she survived and she did absorb her twin. So she had the genetic material from her twin, but this was a single birth, right?
Right.
Later on, she went to have children of her own and she had a very serious illness. And so what they did is they tested the children to see if they could, I believe give her, maybe it was a kidney or something like this, but they found that at least two of her three children were not genetic matches.
Hmm.
They matched the absorbed twin. So the idea here, again, is that this kind of thing happens in nature sometimes. It's not so crazy. It's not so Frankensteinian.
But then we end up calling them chimeras, which is, of course, the name of a monster as well.
Yeah.
So you kind of can't help but fall into that trap with language and our understanding of these scientific principles.
Well, the problem with mitochondrial transfer, at least right now, is twofold. And one is that there are objections that the embryo would contain genetic material from three different people, and they don't know how this would work, how this would interplay. In other words, would the embryo maybe reject some of that genetic material? Would it cause problems with that child later on? The other part of this is there's a question about whether or not any of those mitochondrial genes from the mother may still be present. In other words, you couldn't get all of them out. And that remains to be answered, whether or not there'd be a tiny colony from the mom with the mutations that might eventually take over the other mitochondrial DNA colony from the donor egg.
So it's something we would need to proceed with small-scale studies on, really. But then it involves embryos. It's a hot button issue. How do you get the go ahead to actually research this, even though it could be of tremendous aid to the individual suffering from these mitochondrial diseases that want to have children?
Yeah. And so that's the problem right here. Like, how do you start human clinical trials with these concerns and with some scientists still on the fence of, hey, we shouldn't go down this road because it's a slippery slope. You start doing mitochondrial transfers now and then all of a sudden you'll be creating super babies with all sorts of traits. And so that's part and parcel the problem with this right now, the reason why some doctors cannot get into human trials, even though they've had successful creation of healthy human zygotes in animals.
One of the individuals on that panel was a man by the name of Sheldon Krimsky, professor of urban and environmental policy and planning at Tufts University. And he was kind of the antagonist on the study. But like one of the things he was bringing up is, well, there's this so-called MAO-A warrior gene in human that is all about human aggression.
Mm-hmm.
And so then what parent wouldn't eliminate that to make their child less warlike? I guess if you really want your kid to succeed at sports, you'd say give them two of those if you can. But, you know, it's that kind of argument people end up making. You know, if you can take one candy from the jar, why wouldn't you take two? Why wouldn't you take three?
Well, so what some of the other panelists said is we're not at that point yet anyway.
Yeah.
And so
and it's not as simple as that. You can't really just go in and say, oh, well, that's the aggression gene. Take it out. Now we're good to go.
Exactly. So Nita Farhani, she's a genome sciences and policy lawyer, and actually in the Obama administration, was saying that we shouldn't really over worry this at this point because the technology is not A, ready for us to select at that level, and B, on some level, we are already selecting for traits. So if you are a woman who is looking for a sperm donor, you're going through a book and you might be selecting for blonde hair. You might be selecting for brown eyes. You might be selecting for their athletic prowess or intellectual abilities this is kind of already being done at a very basic level. So what she's saying is this, it's time now to look at the past, look at eugenics, look at the 1970s and some of the guidelines that were created then, and move the goalpost a little bit and then reassess later. And just so that something like mitochondrial transfer can be a reality for parents who are trying to have children who are free of these illnesses or these diseases.
Yeah, I mean, you could certainly argue that looking through you know, a portfolio of potential sperm donors, that that's more like, I mean, there's a difference between choosing something off a menu and going back into the kitchen and telling them what to put in the soup, right?
Right.
But on the other hand, it's very limiting to sort of shackle yourself to this idea that we cannot proceed because we will mess things up too much. I mean, would we ever get anything done scientifically if we went forward with that idea? Though, interestingly enough, it seems like we're really great at advancing science if we say we're doing this so we can kill people better. And then, in which case, all the funding you need.
Well, exactly. And
but no, it might harm somebody, even though we're trying to help people.
Right.
We might use it to, there might be some sort of moral concern with it. Therefore, no procession at all.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
So what's interesting about this is that some of the same arguments were presented when IVF first came into public awareness, mm-hmm. So in vitro fertilization. And obviously, IVF could not have moved forward unless they did it in human trials and found it to be safe for both the mother and the baby.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, they found out that that is the case. And that is actually a path for a lot of parents these days, that they go down IVF. And it's so rote now that it's hard to believe that this was in that same category as mitochondrial transfer 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it was mentioned in Future Shock, and we talked about it in our Future Shock episode. And if you go back, I mean, I certainly remember those editions of, like, Time Magazine or Newsweek and the sort of the scary idea of the test tube baby.
Yeah.
Which today, nobody cares. We're past that fear.
Yeah, so in the same way, mitochondrial transfer really needs to have the human trials in order to find out, yes, this is safe for the child, this is safe for the mother, and to see what, if any, risks are associated with it. It's just interesting because, again, it brings up that can of worms of, well, okay, we do this, and as Sheldon Krimsky on the panel said, you do that, and there's this concern that once we start, we won't be able to stop.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I guess I kind of, to a limited extent, think of it in terms of taking the toddler to the playground. Yes, the toddler's going to injure himself. He's going to fall off of something. He's going to get in a tussle with another toddler. But what do? Do you not go to the playground at all? Do you just stay in the house on a beautiful day?
No, you got to get out there,
right? You got to get out there. I mean, we're humans. We're going to mess things up. We're going to create all sorts of problems for ourselves. But science has been a tool that has allowed us, yes, to cause great harm in the world, but also do great good. I mean, science is really the thing that we do the best. I mean, that is the discipline that we've created that is greater than ourselves.
Yeah, and there may be some other technologies coming online that actually null these arguments. And so I'm thinking about George Church. He is a geneticist and involved in the Human Genome Mapping Project. And he says that genetic diseases can be traced simply by examining sperm and then seeing if it maps against genetic diseases that a female may possess. So he has this whole system where there are like 500 different genetic diseases that they can test for in sperm before it is actually transferred to fertilize an egg.
Right.
The problem with this, of course, is that, you know, if you have a couple who they're trying to do this and they know that the mom has some mitochondrial DNA diseases that she carries and they find out that the dad does too, well, then that kind of, it doesn't really help them. But if you have a female who is seeking a sperm donor, that certainly helps. And then the other technology that may be around the corner is embryonic genome mapping. And that is taking the embryo itself and testing it for possible genetic diseases before it's even transferred back into the mother.
Interesting.
Yeah. So there are these things that are happening that, yes, they're getting us closer to this idea of these designer babies. And yet, at the same time, we are so very far away from that idea, from that actually happening.
I ran across an interesting quote on this topic. This is from Ross Douthat, 2012 opinion piece in New York Times entitled Eugenics, Past and Future. He asks, is this sort of liberal eugenics in which the agents of reproductive selection are parents rather than the state entirely different from the eugenics of Fisher's area, which forced sterilization on unwilling women and men?
All right, so it's an interesting question, and I feel like Nita Farahani, who is on the panel, would say this is not at all the same thing. These are parents who want to make sure that their child is as disease-free and illness-free as he or she could be in their lifetime and are trying to, you know, start a family. This is not some sort of, like, government-industrial complex on trying to create these designer babies.
Right.
These are very individual personal choices versus sort of the state mandate of how we're going to go forward with genetics.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy. I find with myself when I think about this, it's easy to sort of think of it in terms of, all right, well, there are going to be the people that are going to be conceivably making a designer baby. I tend to think, well, this is going to be sort of an upper crust sort of thing. So there's almost kind of a, like a class envy there, you know, where you think, well, this would be technology that's only going to be available for a certain segment of the population.
Yes, but then Farahani points out that overwhelmingly, when parents are trying to create biological children, they want them to look like themselves. It's sort of an ego thing.
Yeah.
So most likely parents are going to go way outside of even how they want their child to be as a human being. And I mean traits like openness or introverted or extroverted or, you know, all these sort of certain things that determine our personalities, let alone their hair color or their eye color. So I think what Farahani is saying there is that, you know, just that we may just be over extrapolating this idea that we're going to create these children that are vastly different from ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. All right, so there you have it, designer children. Some of the current science that's out there, some of the near future science that's there as well, and a lot of just concerns over the ethics, the morality of this whole topic. And so I'm sure a lot of you have some informed opinions on all of this. What do you think about the idea of designer children? What would you do, or what wouldn't you do to have healthy offspring?
Yeah, where do you think the goalposts would be set way too far down the field? I'm very interested in knowing that from you guys out there. Like, what do you think is okay in terms of genetic tinkering, and what is like, no, forget it?
I say no more than 6 arms and no metal skin, because it's just going to be difficult to handle the playground like that.
I was just thinking the playground. That's just such an advantage for some children.
Yeah, but then how are you going to get them off the playground equipment? You're trying to, like, have you ever tried to pull your child off of like a ladder or something? It's like they have amazing grip. Imagine if they had 6 arms. It would be almost impossible.
Yeah, you would need a special instrument for that.
Yeah, and then you have to wipe all those hands after they're through, decimating a bowl of applesauce. It's just too much. Limit it to really 2 hands, 4 max.
All right, guys, you know where you can find us, stuffthatblowyourmind.com. As Robert says, the mothership of everything that is STBYM.
That's right. You can also find us on Tumblr, Facebook, Twitter, Google+. Hey, there's also Mind Stuff Show on YouTube. That's where you'll find all of our cool little video projects we're working on, Science on the Web, Ethics Science, Monster Science, Julie's latest Information Elevator. Check all those out. And is there another way that they can get in touch with us as well?
Yes. You may send us an email if you would like. We would love to hear from you, and you can do that by sending it to blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at King's Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake, let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at King's Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. King's Island is now open on weekends.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.